My name on the announcement outside makes me wonder, is there any language where three consonants, the same one, appear in a row? Is there a language where that's true? Yes. I've never seen my name spelt with three S's. Anyway, I presume part of the reason I'm here is because my BLAST number is 1. And so I guess I owe you a BLAST story. So I'll tell you my experience of BLAST, and probably won't be able to finish my slides because of it, but that's less important. Happy birthday. I wasn't a BLAST student, but I wrote this monster thesis of like 200 pages. And my advisor at the time of my defense had managed to get through a third of it. Well, BLAST read the whole thing and marked it in a lot of red. So now's my chance to get even. Life doesn't often present that possibility. So I realized after I did the slides and decided what I was going to talk about that in some sense this is going to be partly what's happened since. So it's a good chance to bring Andreas up to date, because a lot's happened in the subject, starting with the time he was on my committee. I'm an operative theorist analyst, and I'm very fond of logic and set theory. I remain naive about it, but you know, there's a few questions in here which may be solved by the end of the talk, and that would be great, because I've wondered about them for years, and I never had a chance to run into BLAST when he had time. So now I understand he does email back quickly, and I've had that experience as well, but I felt a little guilty about it if I didn't have anything firmer. But here I can get away with just asking the questions. All right, so here's some references if anybody's curious, and let's get busy with the math. So my thesis started out essentially on commutators, and they were basically operators, Hilbert-Schmidt operators. Commutators are AB minus BA, and A and B are infinite matrices, and these are bounded linear operators. But generally, they're actually in a smaller class called the Hilbert-Schmidt operators. Now, I know many of you know this stuff, but I'm not sure everyone does, so I'll just point it out. Infinite matrices with the entries square-summable, finitely square-summable, so the double sum squared is less than 1 in absolute value, complex entries, are typical Hilbert-Schmidt operators. And there was an early question which got me interested in this whole subject. But as you'll see from this talk, everything's mushroomed to be arbitrary in ideal theory, and I got interested in ideal questions, and some of them will come out of this talk. My issues are whether or not things really depend on choice, or whether or not some things depend really on CH. And so maybe you guys got some experience with this and in this kind of context, or things similar. So H is a separable Hilbert space. That was a generality. It's just a little L2. Okay, and so it's a separable Hilbert space. Okay, B of H, C star algebra, bounded linear operators on H. K of H is the sub C star algebra of compact operators. Those are the norm limits of the finite rank operators. And F is the subclass of finite rank operators. Those are three ideals, the whole one, the whole algebra, this subalgebra that's closed in the operator norm, and F is the finite ranks. Finite rank means F applied to the whole space is finite dimension. Okay, L is the lattice of the two-sided ideals lying in B of H. And the first curious thing about all of this is every two-sided ideal that's not zero, in fact, lies between F and K. So the whole action of ideal theory, which is very classic and goes back to the turn of the, not this last century, but the one before, and maybe earlier, I don't know, is the objects were all sorts of different kinds of things. Lorentz, Marcinkiewicz, Ehrlich spaces, all have their ideal representations, and those ideals all lie between those two ideals. Now, Kalkin and Schatten in the early 1900s came up with a very nice inclusion-preserving isomorphism between from I to sigma of I, between L and what I call sigma. Those are the characteristic sets, and this is how you get a characteristic set. You take C0 star, the set of decreasing sequences to zero, and that's actually the characteristic set of K. K of H, and you take any subset with the property that it's solid. I think you guys called it closed from below, closed downward, I think you call, in your terminology, and it's solid, it's closed under some, and it's also closed under finite ampliation, or it's just as good as to take two ampliation. This is what ampliation is, you just double the entries, but you keep the monotonicity. Okay, so in some sense, if you take a principal ideal, the way to tell whether or not X lies, X is a downward sequence, is the ideal generated by, two-sided ideal generated by diagonal of X. This is contained in Y, same thing for Y. If and only if X is equal to big O of D sub M, M is some positive integer, this is the mth ampliation of Y. So it's a little more complicated than just X less than or equal to Y or big O of Y. Okay, but it's an interesting order. Okay, and this provides a lattice on principal ideals. It also induces a lattice on all ideals and so forth. Okay, so that's a preliminary. Now a little bit of advertisement and history here. So ideals are central in some parts of operator theory and operator algebras. Kalkin first studied them. L is a distinguished, has many distinguished sublattices, which I'll talk about. And I want to talk about their density. I'll define density in case I'm not doing the usual definition. I think it is, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so there's principal ideals, PL, and it's a fact, and I have a question about the continuum hypothesis regarding this later, that every ideal is just the union of this of these finite sums of principal ideals, and this is a directed union. Now, it's pretty easy to see that the directed union of ideals is another ideal. The nested union is, and all you need really is directedness, but arbitrary unions are not necessarily. Okay, so some of my questions later on involve directed unions or arbitrary unions. Okay, so a basic question due to Brown, Piercy, and Salinas is whether or not K of H is the sum of two proper ideals. I think 1971 that might have been published. Okay, and that's where my Bloss number became 1. Okay, and given CH, we proved that that K was the sum of two proper ideals, proved also that neither of them could be countably generated, and in fact proved much more, that given any ideal I, you could write it as a decomposition of two proper ideals. And we used that Kalkin business to do it. Really, the Kalkin business reduces a lot of ideal analysis to just sequence analysis. So I thought you guys might like that, and probably there's some contributions that can be made further in the subject. So, the techniques employed led to set... Oh, now this comes from Bloss. I don't know what group-wise density is, but he tells me that this was somehow involved with group-wise density when it first happened back in the 80s, I guess. And he also said that one of his students, or maybe he, did some work to weaken it. I think Martin's axiom is enough to get the result. I don't know how weak it ever got, and I don't know whether or not anything is equivalent to that. I don't know those things, but Bloss would know how much is known on that stuff. Okay, so, actually I just described that to you when I had a slide for it. Now you'll see why I like to type my slides. Okay. But does that say anything? Yes. One other thing interesting in the paper, which I've used for many years intuitively, though it is another characterization of these ideals, of their elements, operator elements, in terms of the multiplicity, that is the number of, given a sequence, the number of the xi's be given equal to 2 to the k, you call that nk, and that sequence of nk's is a bunch of axioms that resemble a little bit the Kalkin axioms, but these objects are completely different. They're sequences going to infinity, and how they behave and whether they're closed into certain operations or not determine ideals as well. And I think that's pretty was pretty useful in leading to our results. Okay. So, now other work by Salinas, also at Michigan at that time, he studied increasing and decreasing nests of special classes of symmetric norm ideals called Banach ideals, and so that is of interest in the subject, and that, again, that comes up later, and I'll show you some results and pose some questions. Okay. Now, another topic is the commutator space problem about trying to characterize commutator spaces or commutator ideals. Let me just, for those who may not know what they are, if you take two operators in B of H, this means AB minus BA, and this, when you take two ideals, means the linear span, finite linear span, of course, the linear span, all finite linear combinations of these guys. Okay, with A and I and B and J. The Peercy topping question, an early Peercy topping question, was whether the Hilbert-Schmidt class, the product of two Hilbert-Schmidt operators is a trace path operator. You can think of the Hilbert-Schmidt as a little L2 in a non-commutative way, and the trace path is like little L1, a non-commutative way. Okay? And the commutator of these guys was always had trace zero, so this is the trace class. And this was easily seen to be true from classical things. And this was the question. Okay, and so the thesis that Andreas read, it turned out the answer to this question was no. And this comes up in the slides, but while I'm here, I might as well tell you the answer so I can skip the slide. And that was, if you restrict yourself to the special class of diagonal matrices, these Ds are decreasing, and to zero, and the sum of the D's is one in this case. Okay, then the theorem and the thesis was that this is in C10. This already is in C10. This is in C2. If and only if the summation of log n dn is finite. Okay, and so given that condition, if you just choose dn modulo normalization, 1 over n log squared n, you got yourself an example. Where that's infinite, and so this is a trace class trace zero operator that is not a finite linear combination of Hilbert-Schmidt's. Okay. So, anyway, a little bit more advertisement about who else cares about ideals. Kimes is one of the leaders in operator algebras in the world, and Vergisky is another leader, and both of them, in fairly recent publications are a lot of the focus is on these kind of objects. Okay? All right. So, arithmetic means comes into the picture. And let me get through a few slides and then I'll explain an interesting order that came up in dinner last night. So arithmetic means of a monotone sequence were first connected implicitly to commutator spaces or commutator ideals. And again, I just defined them for you. And then explicitly by Colton. Okay, so you can't see arithmetic means happening in here. That is to say, I couldn't. But Colton did. And actually characterized this class. That was in 89. This work is 75. So Calkin characterized this class. I won't mention Calkin's results because it's a corollary of the most general results, and that's I'm going to tell you now what they are. First, some definitions. So, okay, you have this map from X, decreasing sequence in C0 star, to X sub A. What is X sub A? It's the sequence 1 over N, summation from 1 to N, X sub I, and that's a sequence. So every X has its averaging sequence, the arithmetic mean sequence, and turns out that's one of the central operations in the whole theory. Okay, so they provide a key tool for this, and from this, I'll tell you the main theorem in a slide or two, but from this comes these definitions of arithmetic mean ideals. This is a kind of a new category of ideals. So anyway, here's a definition. Sigma of the pre-arithmetic mean ideal is the X is in C0 star 0, whose averages are in sigma of I, or diagonal of XA is in I. And sigma of the post-arithmetic I sub A is just everything, all the sequences that are big O of some eta sub A for some eta in I. So it's basically the ideal generated by all the averages. And that's a bigger ideal. It's clear that this is true. Okay, and what may or may not be true is that this is big O of X. So I guess I'm going out of order, but I guess it's timely. When this is true, that's called that makes X regular. Okay, and what else? It turns out, and this is a combinatorial tidbit, and apparently we've asked Kahn's and some other people, and they don't know this. And this is a combinatorial tidbit, a treat I should call it. And you guys might, I don't know if you know it or not, but it's a beautiful little fact. And that was that X sub A is, I guess, I don't know if you can see this. X sub A, well, is always bigger than or equal to X, but it's actually bigger than or equal to the tensor of X with the sequence 1 over N. Now, of course, that's not monotone. You want to monotonize it. Okay, and less than or equal to twice, and this is sharp, the same thing. I mean, it's sharp in the sense that there is an X for which this is sharp. Or maybe there's a sequence where you approach to. I think that might be more correct. Okay. X tensor 1 over N star. And so that tells you then that the ideal is the same thing as the ideal generated by X tensor 1 over N, whether you star it or not. But the way I find things, you always have to star. So I just do that. And there's another fact that this is the same thing as X, that the arithmetic mean average is the ideal generated by the arithmetic mean of X sub A. And then from this one can generate what I sub A is, and I told you what I sub pre A was. And there's a whole bunch of hierarchies and nests regarding A squared, A to the N is an increasing nest, I sub A to the N is a decreasing nest, things like that. And there's a few papers on these things now in existence. All right. Now, the main theorem from that I'm going to show you in the next slide written is a weaker version of it shows you the relationship between the most general result. If you take an arbitrary ideal and you just want to look at the positive operators in this commutator space, I didn't mention this commutator space is starred. That's important. And self-adjointness plays an important role in this, so I'll show you in a minute. And more generally, the plus of the IJ commutator ideals is really the plus of the pre-arithmetic mean of the product ideal. And from that, you actually get that this space without the plus is equal to this space, the IJ. I'll say that on the next slide. Let me say that. Okay, so this is, I mentioned this about what happened in 1975. Here's the most general result, that the commutator ideal of IJ is the commutator ideal of IJ with B of H, and there's no known non-trivial proof of this. The only proof of this is that they both are this, which is the collection of operators whose, well, you want to take the real and imaginary part, that's T plus or minus T star, and you divide by 2i to get the, but anyway, you take both of those operators, you diagonalize them, call the eigenvalues lambda I. They're self-adjoint compact operators, so spectral theory lets you do that. You take the absolute value of the lambda i's, you reorganize the lambda i's to decrease to zero and keep the multiplicity. Okay, and you want to be sure that the lambda I sequence is a subset of the characteristic set of IJ. That says IJ. Messy, but says IJ. Okay, the big thing is that the arithmetic mean sequence absolute value has to again be in sigma of IJ. That is the diagonal operator with those I, has to be in IJ. That's necessary and sufficient for an operator to be in this class. So all of a sudden, averaging plays a role, and that led to the creation of these ideals. Okay, and the combinatorial tree that I just mentioned to you. Okay. So, from this theory, I have my own map, and from some of you like maps, here's a map, and, you know, the standard stuff everybody knew was that there's this K of H whose characteristic set is C0 star. There's the principal ideal generated by the 1 over N sequence that's inside K of H. Inside that lies the whole trace class. But inside that, there's this new guy, IMAX. Now, one of the reasons and I didn't mention all my co-authors, I wrote them on one of the slides. There, where are they? Yeah, there it is. Dykema, Figel, Wojcicki, and on the title of this talk is Kaftal, who's my local co-author. And we have about 7 or 8 papers on the subject that's evolved from this one with these guys. Okay, anyway. Okay, one of Wojcicki's motivation for looking at this was he wanted to determine all traces or try to characterize traces on ideals. So you give it an ideal, can you characterize trace? What's a trace? A trace is a linear functional that's unitary invariant. Let me show you the quick connection between this. Between unitary invariants, if you take U, A, U minus, minus A, you want to take the trace of that. That would be 0. Okay, that's also the trace of this operator is equal to UA comma U inverse. Okay, so because of ideal structure, this is still an I, and that's a unitary, and so if you could say anything in I, and this operator in I commutated with something in B of H, whether that commutator has trace 0. So in other words, these commutator spaces are the kernels of these things. And so you can decide whether something is a trace if it has the right kernel behavior. So it's connected intimately with the existence of traces and the construction of traces. I won't get into too much to that, except just to say that what IMAX is IMAX is the largest ideal that contains the diagonal 1 over N sequence with the property. It's a unique largest ideal with the property that there's a unique trace on it, and because it lies in the trace class, that trace is TR. So it actually gives trace information. I think you guys like maps, so these are algebraic type maps, but not necessarily continuous. Don't necessarily have continuity, and you can get that out of this theory. So again, the stuff from the 75 is generalized totally to arbitrary ideals and gives lots of information about when traces exist. For example, for the regular ideals, X equivalent to XA, the ideals generated by that, those principal ideals, they have no traces because of this theory. So none of them have traces, okay. Non-zero traces, of course. Zero is always a trace. All right. So, now, stuff that is more starts to approach objects that, from listening to your talks, you might be interested in. Density idea. So, okay, so you'll have the lattice of these two-sided ideas, and they're just classes of sequences with those axioms. The axioms are not too severe, and so, I think Andreas liked them at the time, so we could work with them. You have two different, you have sublattices, you have two sublattices of L, like the principal ideals, or principal ideals with regular sequences, generated by regular sequences. By the way, when you generate, there's no, you can't have an ideal generated by an irregular sequence and a regular sequence. Once you have one regular generator, all generators are regular. So there isn't that issue. All right, and so density is when you have two ideals lying inside a lattice, the question is whether or not you can get one in between, or there's a stronger notion of density where you have a smaller lattice and a larger lattice, and you have I1 is an L1, I2 is an L2, and can you get something between that's not just an L2, but an L1? And that's sort of a stronger notion of density. And that's the subject that we study here with these lattices. okay? And the ideals that we have results for are the principal ideals, the ideals generated by comfortably generated ideals, the ideals whose generators are self-ampliators, that is to say, the ampliation of X is equivalent to X. That's another nice class of ideals, and they have a lattice. Then there's the stable ideals, those are the ones that come from regular sequences. And then there's this other kind of averaging, which is not averaging, it's 1 over n times the tail of X when you have a summable X. And from this, there winds up a summable theory that's rather dual, mysteriously, and we don't know why, to the non-summable theory. And you wind up in this subject with summable and non-summable theory acting very similar, but with very different proofs and very different phenomena. But a lot of the theorems read the same, like the density theorems and then a way to decide whether two principal ideals are equal or not, and so forth. And then, of course, when you talk about density, you want to talk about gaps. So first result is, and also used throughout the paper that this is a little bit of a summary of, is that P, L, and L are upper dense in L. So that's the strong kind of density. Both are not lower dense in L, as every non-zero ideal I has a gap just underneath it. Every non-zero principal ideal. And let me just mention why. That's sort of clear, and it'll be reminiscent, I think, of the proof that a homobasis exists using with HMP or whatever you want to do that. And that is, you just take a principal ideal, take X, and take a maximal chain in it. There's plenty of ideals in it. You take a maximal chain and the union, because it's a chain, is still an ideal, and there you go. Between that and that principal ideal is a gap. So you can create gaps that way. Now, that takes choice, of course. And I asked Blosser yesterday if his result about the equivalence of choice and the existence of a homobasis over an arbitrary field has been settled for if it's just over complexes. He said no. So I'm wondering whether or not a question like this, there's any hope of showing that you need choice or not choice, or is it pretty much the same kind of question? You know, if you can't get it from a vector space homobasis, then maybe, anyway, it's a question that I ask. And it's on one of these slides, but it just came up. All right, so. I have till when? 5-2? Okay. Right, right. So the main density results are that these three classes are both upper and lower dense in PL. And let me tell you just a little bit about the proofs. I won't prove anything, but they require constructing. Okay, so you've got these principal ideals. Everything's a principal ideal here. We're not talking about L now. We're talking about these sublattices. And just between two sequences, keeping in mind those extra axioms, you got to be able to squeeze either nice or bad sequences, nice being regular, bad being irregular, and you get these various density results. But the thing about all three of them is they depend on this Potter phenomena that we discovered, and the Potter phenomena is this, and I'll just tell it to you for the regular sequences. For the regular infinity sequences and for the self-ampliator sequences, there's a very similar one where the P varies, say, bigger than 1 or some other such thing. But this is it, and that is that regularity is equivalent to that the ratio of Xn to Xm, let's say then not never zero, is bigger than or equal to the ratio of M over N to the P with a C there, for some P between 0 and 1. That's for all N bigger than or equal to M. So that's those kinds of sequences are the ones for which the averagings are equivalent sequences. It took us a long time to find that and to see that was essential to prove this thing. Now, we've been able to characterize the gaps in some sense. Okay, so again, it's just a repeat of what I said. There's a gap between two ideals. Two ideals can form a gap, you know, inside a lattice. Or you can have a gap between two ideals where the ideal is in a small lattice and another is in a big lattice. And the gap would be one where you could, you couldn't get anything in the small guy. Or you could. Or you could. That would be like strong density idea. All right, and This is a comment about that you can have gaps between zero and something, even though technically zero is not an ideal. We exclude it, but I don't know why I put that in there. That was just something we needed to put for insurance in the paper. So there's this lemma about gaps that may be familiar to some, maybe reminiscent to something you know. So a pair of ideals is a gap, if and only if, and this is a characterization. If and only if the big guy is the small guy plus a principal ideal, and I is maximal among all ideals, L between I and J, which don't contain this psi. And then there's some corollaries. That you can read them if you like. But the consequence of this thing is that between 22 nested ideals, there's always a gap. Okay, so you can always get a gap there. And in fact, here's the proof: you take something in J that's not an I, and you do kind of like what I said before. You then, by the above lemma, there's a gap between I and this. I is inside J. The psi is in J, but not I. And then you can create I and I plus psi and create a gap. That is an M underneath I plus psi. Okay, so that doesn't mean that IJ is a gap. No, IJ may not be a gap, but you can get a gap between. Okay, and here's another corollary to that. And there's the nature of the gaps are different when you're upper and lower gaps. And, for those who like lattices, that, this is baby logic using choice. I understand that. But I don't know. When you go to non-separable spaces, this might be some action here for interesting examples for logic. This could likely be true. It's just, I'm fixated on unseparable because that's where almost all the open questions are. In operator theory. Excuse me. So upper gaps in L, you can get some. You can get non-upper gaps in L, you get density. For example, this example, now I'm not going to tell you what strong complement it is, but there's a softness notion now in ideals that has to do with the product of the compacts with an ideal. And I'll suppress the definition. But if you take the intersection of strongly complemented ideals, then that never has upper gaps. Now, here's my question to you. Can you do any of this without Zorn? I don't know, are there weaker forms where you can produce these kinds of things? I don't know. But I guess, I wrote this question when I hadn't realized that, I hadn't thought about the Andreas's basis question that's still open. So I guess this is sounds like it's no different than that. No more harder or easier. I don't know, though. All right. And then there's some reports on the density of L, density in L of PL and L of naught. And, this is upper dense, both are upper dense, and these guys have no gaps. Okay, now we get to the continuing hypothesis stuff, and there's only two more slides. So, I got through, I might even be done already. That'd be amazing. Okay. So, one uses of the density is you can actually compute some things. You can compute intersections and unions, and like I said before, some people have tried to do that who work in ideals, and sometimes successfully, and then there were some open questions. But, for example, a typical thing here that you can use density for, is if you take the intersection of all guys in L that contain properly I, then you get I. Or the intersection of all guys in L aleph naught, kind of regenerated ideals, that properly contain I, then you get I. And the same kind of thing with PL. Omega, by the way, is 1 over N, that's what we call it in our work. So if you take the intersection of powers, P bigger than zero, it's equal to the intersection of everything that are delta one-half ideals. Okay, and density is key for that. And you can kind of see a little bit, you can see the Potter-type stuff rearing their head here a little bit. but well, at least the regions. One of Rand's playing a role, and these are the you know, the infinity regulars, or infinity stable if you go to the language of ideals, and this is the just regular arithmetic mean stable ideals. Now the set theory question is this. Okay, so this is things that we can compute. And then we got into a kind of general question. Remember back before, I think the second slide said, maybe the first, said the ideas are just the directed union of finite sums of principal ideals. Okay, so basically they're the directed union of finitely generated ideals. Okay, so every union is the union of every ideal is the union of principal ideals, because those guys, oh, by the way, I didn't tell you that. So, okay, that's just, so finite sums of principal ideals are just principal ideals. Okay, and so every ideal is the union of principal ideals. A natural question is, which ideals are the union of an increasing chain, not directed, but increasing chain of principal ideals? And again, we're only working in C0 star, so we're talking about positive decreasing to zero sequences with those few pretty simple axioms. So we know some others have studied this kind of question, and that's the unions play a, okay, just repeating myself. A partial answer is given by the following proposition. And this is my last slide. Assuming CH, all ideals are unions of increasing chains of countably generated ideals. And two, an ideal is a union of increasing chain of principal ideals if, for every countably generated ideal J and I, there's a principal ideal L that lies between J and I. So you have a kind of density of principles between countably generated. Okay, then you have that ideal is a union of a chain. Okay, and the question is CH needed, and is condition two needed? Is that density kind of thing needed? So that's, you know, baby logic set theory question that I put out. It's the kind of thing that at least, was it 35 years ago? Bloss would have sunk his teeth into a little bit. So, that's it. And I think I'm early. Happy birthday.